The Tom Flowers Cricket Coaching Podcast, brought to you by Bespoke Cricket, Rutland's premium cricket brand. For the best bats, pads and gloves, check out bespoke-cricket.co.uk. Here's what's coming up on the podcast.
We have a very simple rule at TFCC, and that's you need to know one thing about the player, but you need to know two things about the parent. Too many coaches explain the how or the what, so you're not doing this, you're not doing that. Not enough explain the why. Lots of schools, counties, you know, clubs do one-to-one lessons. And are these being recorded, documented? Because ultimately, if you're taking a player on a journey of improvement or development, you need to know where you've come from and where you're going.
Now, on with the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the new season of the TFCC podcast. I'm Tom Flowers, Director of TFCC and ECB Level 4 Elite Coach. Guys, we've been away for a while. Lots to talk about, lots to update you on. However, I would like to focus the new series a little bit more on specific themes for each podcast. So in today's podcast, I'd like to cover feedback and how that happens between from ourselves and from counties and clubs, etc., and schools, and my sort of take on that. So player feedback. I'd also like to update you on a landmark game for TFCC that happened over Easter, and also bring you up to date with a couple of other things in the cricketing world that's been happening. So without further ado, let's kick off the new season of the TFCC 2025 podcast. Right, guys, so feedback. Feedback for players, I think, is where I want to go with today. And it's something that's been a bugbear of mine for a while now. I feel very strongly and very passionately about feedback and what's currently taking place, be it from schools, counties, etc. And to me, there are some basic fundamentals that need to happen in order for that to... for the process to happen a lot easier, and just for clarity and transparency between the various stakeholders and key players that are involved. And at TFCC, I'm really positioned in the middle of all the different elements and the different environments that a lot of the players are playing in. So we might see an individual who is a county age group player. They are an independent school where they've got a head of cricket. They are playing club cricket and senior cricket maybe. Maybe they come to us as well. And I think we all have a duty to ensure that in the best interest of the player, be it technical coaching, workload, mindset, or just where they're at generally, I do feel that a lot more can be done from that perspective. Now, I think at the moment you've probably got a situation where if you look at it as a threefold, you've got counties, private coaches and schools. I think you've probably got a situation where the schools and private coaches probably feel that it's the county coaches' jobs to oversee each player's development, due to the fact that they are on the county pathway or contracted as an academy player or whatever it might be. The problem with that is lack of resource, and there is not enough resource time in the day for the county coaches to be able to manage, in my opinion, each player effectively. But there are some easy wins that don't happen. And I often have chats with, over the years, I've had chats with county coaches and pathway coaches and said, look, my door's always open, the phone's always there. If you know I'm working with a player or we're working with a player, please do pick the phone up, because it's really important that we align in what we're doing so that messages are simple, players are interpreting things in the correct way. And when that is done well, I think it works really well. But there are some easy wins, and you know, I'd like to see more potential online portals where if you have Jay Bloggs, who is a county under 16, 17 batter, and he works with two or three coaches, school, privately, county, that after each session, for example, the coach was able to input some feedback into that system. It will just make sure that things are aligned. I don't think it's a lot of effort. I think that that should be led by the counties. That's something that just requires a little bit of time. But if that happens, I do think you're going to find that these players' development is far more aligned. Equally, scheduling and player calendars, that would be an easy thing to set up by a county. And therefore, as a private coach and a schools coach, you could see exactly where the pinch points are or where you can slot sessions in. And it just makes the whole thing more holistic from that perspective. So, you know, the easy wins for me are getting some kind of feedback on a portal, getting some kind of shared calendar, but also just picking the phone up and actually, and I do believe that should be led by the counties ultimately. If you are a pathway player and you're under the jurisdiction of a county and they've registered you, and that's the most, you know, elite level of cricket, that should really come from the county cricket club. I've had some really positive experiences of that over the years where I've had a really good two-way dialogue, but as with a lot of things, the landscape's ever changing, new people come in, new academy directors come in, new coaches come in, and I do think that from my perspective it's got to come from one person and be very much proactive in reaching out for feedback, picking the phone up. And I know categorically firsthand that from certain academies that is not happening, where they're not getting regular check-ins, picking the phone up regularly and getting that feedback that is so simple to have. So that's sort of one thing that I think that is a real easy win that would just align things a lot easier. And schools and individual coaches have to take responsibility for that as well. So that is a three-way thing where we all need to put our heads together. And as I said, I've got a couple of solutions there that I'd like to see implemented, but ultimately I don't feel that should be coming from a private coach. That should be coming from the professional setup. So it's interesting. I mean, that's my overview of what's currently happening out there. I think that the way that we do feedback at TFCC is dead simple. I see player development as a triangular format, if you like. So I see player, I see coach, and I see parent. So player is the individual, coach or coaches, brackets, that's myself plus any other key stakeholders in their development, and the parent as well. And I think that when you're coaching youngsters in their formative years, it's absolutely crucial that you have the parents on board. They are their taxis, they are their eyes and ears, they are fundamental to the values that these youngsters are developing, honing, being exposed to. And I'm yet to see a player disadvantaged when a coach has nurtured and put time into that coach-parent relationship. A big thing for me is getting parents on board. Once they're on board with the development, you have a trust. When there's trust, there's an open environment. When there's an open environment, you get honesty and you can get real results. Do I think that happens in our institution as a private coaching company? Yes, I do. Do I think it happens in schools? Yes, I do. I've got some good examples of that firsthand. Do I think that happens at counties? No, I don't. But do I blame them either? No, I don't. And one thing I want to share today is the fact that I do feel that counties are in a very difficult position. I often get parents coming to me saying they've not had any feedback or the feedback's limited. And I try and give a very measured and measured response with that, because we do have really good relations with counties. Only last week I recommended a youngster for a North Hants game where he wasn't getting opportunities elsewhere, and his best interest, he needed opportunity. But I do think that unfortunately the modern way and modern parenting has meant that giving feedback as a coach, as a county coach, they probably just get to a point where they think, is this really worth it? And what I mean by that is that for what you can gain from giving constructive feedback and pointers and honest directive into what they need to do you know, to either get back in or to improve on or whatever it might be. I think a proportion of parents have actually ruined that feedback process, in my opinion. That might be quite strong language, but I see it in schools, I see it in coaching, and I see it in the modern parent, which is every piece of feedback is there to be challenged. And, you know, when I was at school, for example, Mr. Smith, 7PS, I never forget it, he said, "Tom cruises through lessons. He needs to get his foot down if he wants to make himself something in life and, you know, maximise his potential." Something like that, okay? At that point, my dad collared me and gave me the most almighty of bollockings you could ever get. And he sort of said this famous quote, "Don't be a waster." Now, my dad accepted the view of, I think it was Phil Smith at the time, as my teacher. He didn't question that. He didn't see it as an opportunity to challenge it. He accepted a professional person's feedback in their sphere of expertise. Now, the problem you've got is that the county coaches are exposed to giving feedback and the parents taking the same mentality into their representative cricket. So Johnny's unfortunately, you know, he's not athletic enough, he's not fit enough in the side, he needs to improve his scores where it comes to baseline fitness tests, etc. A parent will go back and challenge and say, well, he's never had issues with his fitness before, he's done this in cross country, he's done this in his rugby, you know, please can we pick up the phone and have a chat? Well, really, there doesn't need to be a lot to be discussed. If your professional person, your coaching team, feels he's not fit enough, then he's not fit enough. And for me, the parents who have questioned that over time and kicked back and seen it as an opportunity to challenge have actually maybe ruined that opportunity for counties to be more open and two-way with feedback. Now, what I do want to clarify at this point is there's a big difference between having a relationship with a parent where you are open, honest, having communication, being personable, not having that feeling as us and them, as coach and parent, but it's actually a collective effort in ensuring the nurturing and the environment we're providing the youngster. There's a very big difference between a good, healthy relationship with a parent and giving feedback or not giving feedback. Because feedback is a very formal type of dialogue, whereas I'm talking about earlier, having that healthy relationship is informal dialogue between parent and coach, which I don't think happens enough at the moment. And it might be something as simple as asking a parent, you know, how the week's been, or, you know, what they do for work. Or we have a very simple rule at TFCC, and that's you need to know one thing about the player, but you need to know two things about the parent when you first meet them. And I think that really helps gain the trust, develop that relationship, and then you then get that back tenfold, because parents will then offer up things to you. Oh, he's a little bit tired after he's had a long day at school, or he's, you know, been training, he's had two matches this morning, or, by the way, Tom, he's had a poor session at county this week, just so you know, can you have a word? And it really, really is, you might not always agree with the parent, but to just rubbish them, shut them out and keep them at arm's length, for me, is a very easy and weak option as a coach that perhaps doesn't fancy either the dialogue, isn't capable of conducting themselves in them difficult moments or conversations, or equally just isn't willing to put the time into them relationships. And I do see a lot of that out there, and I have seen a lot of it over the years. So I guess that's my sort of view on the current model of feedback and how it's happening. As I say, the feedback that happens within sessions, that's also crucial for me. So if you are feeding back to a player, sort of different types of feedback, you might give them some hot feedback, so that is at the end of their session. What have they done well? What's not gone so well? Why? Explaining why you think that, or why you're asking to instigate a change. Too many coaches explain the how or the what, so you're not doing this, you're not doing that, not enough explain the why. So, you know, you keep hitting the ball in the air, and you're going to get caught. Okay, right, okay, well, that's fair enough. The why to that is, so why is it so important? Well, if you learn to play the ball later, you can hit the ball as hard as you want because you're hitting the ball on the downswing rather than the upswing, and then you can get your hand speed quicker, you can hit the ball hard, and you'll actually, you know, score more runs and more boundaries, etc., and be the attacking player you want to be. So that is my reason for being really, really tough on you about hitting the ball on the floor. That's the why. Not as simple as do this, you know, you need to hit the ball on the floor, period. So I think that understanding that and then enabling players to, in that feedback, go away. And I'll often say to players, you know, drop me an email, use mum or dad's phone to drop me a WhatsApp. If you've got any secondary reflections or further reflections on today's session, in your own words, send me a summary. And I guess that aids the learning process, but it also, you know, shows me as a coach if that feedback's been taken on board and sort of understood. And then if it's not, you've also got an opportunity to clarify anything. So there's that secondary dialogue that can take place. So I think that's really, really key regarding how we sort of feedback to players. We also have a reporting system, so all our players have their own one-to-one notes, so we all have a file for each player that gets inputted every single session and signed off. It's not accessible for players, that's a coach's feedback area, but it does mean that all sessions are aligned, planned, handed over, and if a player ever does request some sort of specific notes for anything they might be doing, we can always give them that. So I think that's also quite important, something that I'd question if it does happen everywhere. Lots of schools, counties, you know, clubs do one-to-one lessons. And are these being recorded, documented? Because ultimately, if you're taking a player on a journey of improvement or development, you need to know where you've come from and where you're going. And if you can't verbalise that at the start of your session, sort of what we've done previously and what we're doing today, and at the end of the session, right, this is what we've covered today and this is where I see us going in our next session, to me you're then just fudging it and sort of making it up on the spot, tossing a coin, and that isn't really, for me, what coaching looks like. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is county selection and feedback from that. So I've had a couple of youngsters come to me sort of April time this year, and they've not been picked in their county squads. You know, quite rightly, if they're not good enough, then they're not picked. That's simple as that. And that's not anything, to, as I say, to be challenged, or if that's an opinion of a professional coach, one has to accept that. You might not agree with it, but you have to accept it. But what it's highlighted to me is a bit of a flaw in the system. So if you've got a county that's got a development squad, a major county, one of the 18 over the winter, and they've got a development squad of, I don't know, 16, 17 players. For me, the counties have a duty of care that if they are releasing players from that 18, 20-man squad or 24, whatever it might be, where do these players then go? So are there under 16, 18 games, or under 14, 18 games, or is there a development side that plays against the side that's picked midway through the summer? Are there development fixtures against schools or against good club sides? But it doesn't appear that's happening. So what I've picked up this summer is that a bit of a flaw in the system across the counties in the local area, across the board, which is if you don't get picked for the main squad and you're released early April, mid-April, where do you go from there? Because if you left a major county, the minor counties will say, and I've had this firsthand where I've said, look, I've got a youngster here, he's been left out of the squad. Are there any opportunities? And they're saying, well, no, we've picked our squad for the year. They've been training together all winter. And there's an opportunity to say, you've effectively got a youngster who could be playing county age group 1 year, training all winter with that county squad, and they're not able to succession plan because they're part of that major county for the winter until April. It gets to April and they've got no representative cricket. because squads are already picked. And I do find that really hard to get my head around, in that there needs to be some sort of dialogue, relationship. So I had a lad last year who was left out of the Leicester squad before last season, and he went to Cricket East, and they'd already picked the squad. So he got no rep cricket last year as a 17-year-old. Only now he's under 18, a year on, when he's been able to train in the winter, has he been able to get rep cricket this year. So for me, there's a real void in the system somewhere, and I don't know how this is addressed. To me, it's an ECB issue, but they need to look at the development of these youngsters, because if you're peripheral and you get left out as a 14-year-old, you could have a season of not even playing for a minor county age group fixtures, which play against the main counties. So you've potentially got if you look at the main counties as A team players, if you look at the minor counties as C team players, well, the ones that are peripheral for the main squads that aren't getting picked or playing, if they're not dropping into a minor counties side, which I'll add will be playing against a lot of these major counties, you've got effectively got a band of, excuse the term, B team players, second level, whatever, who are not getting representative cricket. And I just can't fathom my head around that or work around that. I'd love to know what the solution is, what people's opinions are on that. So if anyone does have any ideas on that or suggestions or whatever, please do drop us a message, get in touch, make a comment. But I'm yet to find, you know, other than the counties saying in February, look, we've picked the squad now, and giving players the choice of a 2-month period, or at least a heads up, look, you're not in the starting 12 or 14, we advise you to go and look elsewhere for the next 2 months where they can actually catch on the back end of some winter training. I understand why counties don't do it, because they want their pick of their players for as long as possible, but at the detriment potentially of that youngster getting cricket that season, even if not with them, because they may well return to that county at some point. So I'd love to know the answer. I'd love to know what the solution is. But there is a definite problem that I have seen here firsthand with at least three youngsters now in the last 2 years where they've missed out on a year of rep cricket. And it can't be right. If it's a tiered system, these fringe players in the county squads need to have a pathway straight into that minor county's age group representative side. I can't see another way that works. Moving on, so that sort of feedback covered from my perspective. If anyone's got any comments, as I say, please do let me know. I'd love to hear. I want to move on to some really positive news. Over Easter, we did a first ever TFCC representative 11 against Uppingham School. Uppingham's one of our real key relationships as a private coaching company. They are really proactive in the way they, ironically, feedback, engage. We have a really positive two-way relationship where we really value the time and effort and work that they put into players, and I think that is reciprocated as well. So it's a really good example of a healthy relationship between key stakeholders. So much so that we had a pool of players, again, who were sort of falling into the district category or sort of sub-county, and we were able to put a showcase game on for them where there were Uppingham coaches present. There was a county age group game going on at the same time. It was a great exercise for us to not only be able to say thank you to these boys who have committed time over the winter to working hard, but it was more an opportunity for them to showcase their skills in an environment that they might not get an opportunity to do otherwise. So I think 9 out of the 11 were state school lads. To me, that's a really big point to hammer home, and something, as I say, as a state school man myself, close to my heart. But I just wanted to get on record a big thanks to Uppingham School for the way they facilitated that, their constant proactive approach to fostering relationships with external coaches, and they are a fine example of how when you value all key stakeholders in a player's development, just how much added value and progress you can make as a collective rather than a group of individual entities trying to get to the same result. So that was a real positive. We're looking at rolling that out a little bit more next summer, hopefully with some more rep games, but also some coached practice games over the Easter period. That's something that we're looking at doing at TFCC. So look, guys, I hope that's been a interesting or provoking first podcast of the summer. It's been great to sort of address them points and sort of go through them. Again, keen to get any comments on viewpoints. This is just my perspective. I always try to offer balance. I try to offer a fair assessment. Again, you always have to remember that my viewpoint and stance is having come through the pathway, being positioned where we are exposed to boys and girls who are playing across six or seven different pathways in our region. So we're constantly getting feedback. We're at the centre of the eyes and ears, if you like, of what's going on out there. So I am trying to give as best as possible a measured approach, but also I'm trying to see if we can facilitate and instigate a bit of change and some easy wins across the board as to how we can, you know, ultimately benefit the player more. So look, thanks ever so much. That's episode one of the TFCC 2025 summer podcast series. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to leave us a review and follow us so you never miss an episode.